What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report here under lockdown. Still, we don't know exactly for how long. JR, what are your thoughts? How much longer do you think this is going
to
last?
Oh, you know, how long this whole thing is going to last? Well, it's kind of not lasting anymore. Mm-hmm. It's Memorial Day weekend, and if you decide to approach any kind of festivals, maybe is it? I don't know.
Festivities?
I didn't go to any festivals. But like the actual festivals, I think were kind of forming like on their own. Like that was kind of the plan I was going for when I completely screwed up the word. They weren't official festivals, but there was definitely festivals.
Yeah.
It looks like it's kind of over already. I mean, you know, especially if you head to the beach in your beach city, if you happen to live in one, it's over. It's all good.
If you're going to the pool parties in the Ozarks, which we'll be talking about a little bit later on.
Oh my God. Lean back again like this.
Look oh my it. God! I didn't even realize we were wearing the same shirt. I had no idea. I would not have even noticed that. This shirt, by the way, one of our new ones. You know where you can get this? ShopTYT.com. You know what you could have gotten yesterday? 15% off Memorial Day sale, but you waited. You should still get the
you
shirt.
Said you were. But you said you were out partying in the Lake of the Ozarks.
Exactly.
Instead of getting your 15%.
Exactly. So in LA County, as of today, the county, I don't know exactly which city by city is doing this. In-store retail is reopened. Drive-in theaters are reopened, which that seems very reasonable.
You mean all two of them that exist?
I know. Hey, I want them to become more common. And by the way, they might become more common as a result of this. But anyway, so that's what's going on in our neck of the woods. Hope everybody joining the chat is safe and doing well wherever you are across the country, around the world. Thank you for joining us. Those of you who are already here, please hit the like button so that more people know that the stream is now active and they can come join us, join the conversation that JR and I are going to be having about a number of topics. We're going to be starting off in just a moment with updates on George Floyd. We've got Trump sparring with social media, threatening to end it. Which would be the quickest path for to insanity for him if he could not be tweeting. But we'll talk about that. CNBC, a raucous conversation there. We might have some fun with that. Sean Hannity has reached the line of dismissing the coronavirus and all of that, the propaganda, that he couldn't cross. Yeah. Amazing. Revelation here on the show today. And then we're going to close with a little bit more on masks. And it's revealed why we never should have been surprised that the right would turn against mask wearing. It was lurking there the whole time. We're going to reveal that to close the show. So you can't go anywhere because you got to find out about that. So get ready. Before we jump into it, I did want to give you another reminder that we are just 4 days away from the end of the month, which means trying to reach our general fundraising goal at TYT. There's only a few days left for that in May. If you can help out the network, please go to tyt.com/go, and you'll be able to do that there. Any help you can provide would be much appreciated. And thank you to all of you who are watching this show right now on Twitch at twitch.com/TYT, where this show is broadcasting, the main show, The Conversation, Staying Home with Josh Fox, Old School Happy Half Hour, as well as specials, including tomorrow night, a special with Brett Ehrlich and myself. And we're going to be doing some other streaming. I'm going to be doing something myself on the weekend, too. So you're going to want to go to twitch.com/TYT, follow the channel, and you'll get notifications when those go live as well. With that, JR, you want to jump into this?
Let's do it.
Let's do it, although we're going to be starting off with just about the worst sort of news. Since yesterday, when a video was made available of four police officers murdering a 46-year-old individual named George Floyd in Minneapolis, there have been calls for consequences, and there have been some. The four police officers have been fired as of right now, but many are saying that considering what we know about that incident, what is perfectly visible, you can see the tape, that is not enough. That is not acceptable. And I want to show you now a video of the family of Floyd talking. Here is Philanese Floyd, his brother, being asked a question by Don Lemon about the current state of the consequences.
Call. But is that enough for your family, Philanese?
No, not at all. I love my brother. Everybody loves my brother. Knowing my brother is to love my brother. They could have tased him. They could have maced him. Instead, they put their knee in his neck and just sat on him and didn't care at all. He screamed, "Mama, mama, I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And they just didn't care. So I just don't understand what more we got to go through in life, man. They didn't have to do that to him. He's a gentle giant. He don't hurt anybody. He give his last to anybody. They didn't care. They treated them worse than they treat animals. And I wouldn't treat animals like that. They took a life, now they deserve life. I don't feel sorry for them. They hurt me and they hurt my family. I can't take nothing back. I can't get my brother back. They at home, they sleep, they with their wives, they got kids. If something like that happened to them, they'll be just like me.
Oh, JR.
Okay.
So you go on.
So this is it's nothing new. It's a such a common occurrence. It's just now we're readily available to see and experience and interview the families of people that were murdered. Maybe from citizens who were backed by the cops, or cops themselves, or just citizens who weren't backed by the cops and the cops didn't do anything about it at all. So it's such a regular occurrence that it's nothing new. So black folks have been seeing this. Minorities in this country have been seeing things like this since forever. It's just now the rest of the country is seeing it because now everyone has a cell phone. These things, and every time they pop up, whether it be from someone's cell phone or maybe the city finally releasing some kind of body cam footage, finally we're seeing things that everyone has been talking about, and the outrage has to go to, hey, let's put a mic in front of everyone's face and see what they feel about this latest thing. And I'm always torn with this feeling of having to look at this again, to discuss it again, to spread the news about it again, just so we can have some level of awareness so the rest of the country understands what we've been understanding and experiencing for this long. And I've relayed this story before. I grew up in St. Louis. My father was pulled over on a bicycle. Me and two cousins in car were harassed in general by cops just for existing. And if you say this to people, they go, why would the cops do something like that? Come on, you're crazy. And no one believes you until there's a video. Now, the downside to now having this proof, and now we've got people like Sean King and everybody posting videos every day of someone's body splayed out on the ground, bleeding or unconscious, or then pleading for their lives under the knee of someone. That's what we have to now take solace in. We have to be happy about that. Yeah. Oh, great. We have a new video of a dead black guy on the ground. This is great. You see, you guys? Do you see yet? Do you see the problem yet? And then, you know, certain percentage of the population goes, yeah, we see it. This is so messed up. And then we move on to the next day to do it all over again. There was a tweet from Quinta Brunson, very talented actress and very funny. This was not funny. She says, being black is having a good day, and then seeing another black person was killed for no reason. Then you have to think about and talk about that all day. Or don't, and numb yourself. It's a constant emotional war. And her follow-up tweet was, meanwhile, you still need to work and worry about everything else. So we complain about how Americans and politicians say this. Americans are sitting around the dinner table trying to figure out bills and their kids and all this and how to make sure ends meet and make sure that this is happening great. And especially now during this pandemic when everyone's at home and trying to figure out the best way to go about living, literally, now we see more videos of this and we have to be confronted with this. This is what we're seeing every day and this is what we now have to do. I tell you guys all the time, I take a break from politics on the weekend because it's just too much. But then during the week, when I see things like this or when I hear about it, because I get a lot of tweets every time this happens from every one of these instances, and I apologize to the people that I don't respond to or the people that we don't then follow up and have a story about this, we could do a 2-hour story, a show every day about this. And everyone won't have a video connected to it. And then every time that doesn't happen, I'm sure we'll have a significant portion of the people say, oh, where's the video? So we need to see snuff videos of how you're killing people on the streets in order for you to believe us that this has been a problem. We need to change things. No more apologies, no more governors of states, no more police heads, no more mayors coming out and saying, this is enough. I'm tired of it. Yeah, I need to stop talking. I need something to be done at a widespread level. We've had this same thing happen years ago. So with Eric Garner. So let's not act like we haven't heard someone already say, I can't breathe, get off me.
Yeah.
But we'll continue to allow it to happen because we just don't really care. So I don't need to keep seeing death videos. I don't need to keep seeing them for me to try to prove something to someone that I actually don't care about their opinion because they actually don't care about my life. I'm over it. I'm so tired of it. I've been over this for years. I was over before we were putting cell phone cameras out. I was over when Rodney King got beat in the middle of the street and everyone said, oh my God, can you believe the police actually beat someone? That was 1992, bro. And we're still doing this. And we're still going through the same cycle. It's gotten to the point now where I feel like, hey, are we just enjoying this now? Hey, let's get another one of those videos out and watch someone pass out and die in the street. Let's watch him bleed out. Hey, let's watch him get shot and stumble over and see his last steps. Let's see all this again for what reason anymore?
And insult to injury that 9 times out of 10, the video existing doesn't even change the outcome.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean,
for justice, we're putting videos out for justice, and then we get like 1% of that justice, and we're supposed to all feel happy again about this. No, yeah. Man.
We've seen videos of people running away and being shot in the back, and it didn't matter. And like, to some extent, it kind of feels a little bit like school shootings. Like, you know how, like the first time a huge school shoot or a huge shooting in a church happens, and that was distinct. And then because it's America, more happen in churches or more every specific thing that seemed so impossible, it just, you get deja vu when it starts happening again. Like you said, like his dying words, we've heard those exact words before. Like, how many times have we seen the family holding up the picture on CNN before? Every bit of this, just, it feels like horrific deja vu is what it feels like.
Yep.
Every bit of it is the same.
And then we have to bring I need the families of these folks to start turning down these interviews and respectfully decline and be like, I get what you're trying to get to, Don. Yeah, you want to get our story out there. You want to help us achieve justice. And that's why they'll do it. It's not because they're looking to really get a chance to get out there and cry on television about their dead family member. But we need to start sending letters no one could be reached for response, but here's a letter. We're sick of this. Yeah. Is all the letter needs to say.
Yeah. Well, this is George Floyd. He died and he didn't have to. And right now, look, we said, you know, the cops are fired. Obviously, people want charges. The family talked about that in the video right now. And so there have been protests going on in Minneapolis. There's been police, you know, throwing tear gas grenades and shooting rubber bullets and things like that. Some people are speaking out against it. Ilhan Omar had a good tweet saying that it should never be tolerated, especially when kids are around. Police need to exercise restraint. And the thing is, we know that they can, because as many people have pointed out, while you can see scenes like this and this and this and this in Minneapolis, when militias were marching with guns and getting in the face of the Michigan government, and in fact causing a session of the legislature to not happen...
Yep.
Total restraint. They, like, it actually worked. The implied threat of violence got a government to change its behavior.
Absolutely.
And like, we're not even covering that they lynched the governor in effigy. Like, they hung the governor in effigy. Like, the reopened North Carolina woman, her husband is saying you should be ready to start killing people. another guy, this Cowboys for Trump guy who's been in the White House. I'm sure, JR, you see everything on the internet. You've seen this. Is like the only good Democrat's a dead Democrat. And so we have found the thing about this pandemic that has offended them. It's that the wrong party is dying, I guess. So they can show restraint in the face of right-wing violence. But a complete lack of violence from someone like George Floyd still results in his death.
And I've said this before, it's an indictment of our society. The reason why it continues to happen is because our society as a whole doesn't care enough. And also police officers, people in power, politicians, all they are is another member of society. So when police officers go home at night, and I know I'm making a broad generalization, so fine, I'll say this. Every police officer isn't bad. I got that out of the way. Okay, so when police officers go home at night, they take off their uniform and all they are is another guy named Jim who sits around, nobody sits at the dinner table number two, who goes around, sits at home and watches TV and eats his dinner. He's the same person that reads stuff on the internet, who posts things on the internet, who reads racist things on the internet, who maybe absorbs some racist things on the internet, who absorbs racist things from his racist friends. He grew up with a bigoted father. He grew up with a bigoted grandfather. And he has these beliefs in his head. He's just another member of society. And then when he goes into work and clocks in and puts on a uniform and a bulletproof vest and straps his gun to his waist and goes out with his partner, he's just another guy who believes the same things the rest of society tends to believe about black folks and Latinos and Asians and Jewish folks and anyone else that has been victimized by this country. Is to continue to say, hey, you know what? They're the bad guys, because I've been told that so many times. Hey, I like this guy that's in the White House. He has it right. They're just another member of society, and they're given a power to carry out those beliefs on a daily basis because they said that guy was committing a crime. And after they realized the guy maybe wasn't committing a crime or maybe wasn't doing anything that was harming you, they go, well, I'm a cop in this moment, so I can kill him now.
Yeah.
No, they're not better members of society just because they have the job of being able to enforce death upon people. That doesn't make them some other kind of human that's above other humans that believes the things that they believe.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that attitude is a carryover from decades and decades of like massive societal respect for cops when they were doing the same things. We just didn't see it on the news necessarily. Yeah.
The woman in Central Park that tried to call the cops on that guy that tried to get her to leash her dog, if she was a cop, she'd have pulled out tasers, she'd have pulled out guns, she'd have been like, you're on the ground, I can't believe it, like, because she had this disdain and anger for him, and she also knew that America doesn't really give a damn about someone who looks like him. That's why she used it as a weapon. Yeah. She goes, I'm going to call the cops. You know what I'm going to say? She didn't say, I'm going to call the cops and tell them that you're threatening me. Because I'm going to call the cops, and she punched the, I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening me, because she knows that works. Because
yeah.
The cops have told her countless times, hey, if you tell us that there's an African-American that's assaulting you and it's aggressive and it's angry, we will be there to murder. If nothing else, we'll at least be there to assault.
Yeah.
Whoop him a little bit, and then you can feel better about yourself. That's what we've told folks to do. And in the fact we keep doing it, what's going to make them stop?
Probably not just the threat of losing your job, and let's be real, losing your job very briefly, let a few weeks go by, get hired by the police department 10 miles down the road, more than likely.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, one more.
Sure.
I think it wasn't Minnesota, because everyone I heard about the Minnesota thing, I get it confused with the other thing that happened in either New Hampshire or Connecticut. Some other man got snatched out of his car by two officers who decided to break out the window and said he stole it. Because
I don't remember.
Hey, there's a black guy. Hey, he's in a car. Let's pull him out. Again, all I'm saying is if it wasn't for a video, we wouldn't have seen that one either.
Yeah.
But it happens every day. And then when someone comes out and it has a position of influence, says, hey, black folks are getting hunted every day. And then people push back and say, how dare you have so much hyperbole? We need to show you a video every day for you to believe that black folks are hunted every day in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
And so then we have to take that emotional damage of proving something to you. Now, you're not worth me proving anything to you anymore. You're not worth me showing you death so that you can still not believe it the next time it happens. Yeah. No.
Or try to prove it. Because like the Ahmaud Arbery video, you know, what percentage of the American public looks at that and thinks, yeah, no, they had to do that.
Yes.
what could be on a video that would get through to some of these people? Nothing. Nothing.
Nope.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump has been just begging for a good public fact-checking for a while, because we know that that changes people's minds. And he finally did get one on Twitter, actually, a tweet that he had sent out about mail-in voting and supposed mail fraud, which we know is not true, was actually amended by Twitter. The original tweet read, "There's no way, zero, that mail-in ballots will be anything less than substantially fraudulent. Mailboxes will be robbed, ballots will be forged, and even illegally printed out and fraudulently signed. The governor of California is sending ballots to millions of people. Anyone living in the state, no matter who they are or how they got there, will get one. That will be followed up with professionals telling all these people, many of whom have never even thought of voting before, how and for whom to vote. This will be a rigged election. No way." There's about a million things that are inaccurate there. The important thing is that Twitter has put on the Get the Facts About Mail-In Ballots on both of those, where you can click to be brought to a page that provides a fact check. So there's a lot to cover here. JR, are you surprised at all that they finally did weigh in and add one of those little amendments?
Yeah, I'm surprised they did that, but I'm not surprised that it's virtually ineffective. Mm-hmm. You put a little tagline on something in blue at the bottom. I didn't even see how it looks. I'm assuming it's blue.
It is.
Oh, what do you know?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't see it. It's really small.
It is very small.
So that's the move to looking to quell people's concerns about the way we've gone about allowing this president to be a rogue old man on Twitter that happens to have enough followers to influence their thought processes and make sure that they go his way. They need to do more. I mean, if I post post a Tom Petty song on the internet and just jam out to it, you know what I'm going to get? I'm going to get this thing called a copyright strike. Be like, "JR, your name is not Tom Petty. You're not the person who maybe owns the rights to the song if it's not Tom." Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. We're shutting this down. No questions asked.
Yeah.
Not my Twitter account being shut down. That comes later, because that notification says if you continue this behavior, you will be suspended. That happens. It doesn't happen if you look to subvert an American election with constant lies from the position of power as the person who's looking to get reelected for the same office that you're looking to misinform people on a very broad scale. That's more of a problem than me posting Tom Petty, "Last Dance with Mary Jane." Is that him? Was that him?
I think so. I have that right. I think so, yeah.
Right? If I say my name is Tom Petty, didn't write this song, it was me. Guess what's going to happen to me? Then I can go, "Oh, JR, that's an interesting thesis you have there. We're going to leave that up for everyone just to see." Mm-hmm. Of my few thousand followers. That's it. But if you've got millions of followers and your name is Donald Trump, you can do all kinds of things to subvert an election and lie to people and tell people what's happening because they believe your insanity, because they're in your cult. They need to do more. These things need to be cut into. There needs to be notification that comes with it. And not Donald Trump deleted this tweet, but this tweet was deleted due to extreme inaccuracies and blatant lies. Yeah, it needs to be said.
Well, and specifically, extreme inaccuracies, blatant lies that have the potential effect of affecting the outcome of an election.
Absolutely.
And that are being spread by someone with a constitutional responsibility to not subvert American democracy. Those are like, obviously for a regular person, I care far less than someone who has been verified. What's the purpose of verification if you still can't trust anything people say? The issue is that even with that little thing that we saw there, the label only appeared on the tweets 9 hours after they were tweeted. He'd already been retweeted 20,000 times. 9 hours later. And by the way, let's take a look at this. I know it's small. It says, get the facts about mail-in ballots. Okay, but it doesn't say this dude's lying. It's just like, get the facts. It could be like, hey, he raised the topic, and now we're going to give you extra facts. Very few people are going to click on it in the first place. It doesn't even really imply anything strong enough, particularly with the sheer quantity of lies that are actually there. Like, the idea that people are going to be like, in the weeks leading up to an election, you know, people are starting to send in their mail-in ballots. I should start knocking over mailboxes. To then open up and what, white out their ballots? Who thinks that's going to happen, that the ballots will be forged? There's no evidence that that happens. Illegally printed out and fraudulently signed. I have a feeling it's a little bit more difficult than that. Just the lie there that the governor of California is sending ballots to millions of people, anyone who lives there. That's simply not true. You have to be a registered voter, which of course, undocumented immigrants that he points out there are not and cannot get those. He is attempting to manipulate people into believing false things about the integrity of our elections.
None of it makes any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And of course, well, except that he knows that this is going to work because virtually every Republican in the country now agrees that mail-in voting is inherently fraudulent. Never mind the fact that Republican states use mail-in voting and Donald Trump himself voted by mail. None of it has to make sense. It doesn't have to be internally consistent in any way. But it is potentially laying the groundwork for him to claim that the results in general in November or in particular states cannot be trusted. And in what could end up being a very close election, do you want the future of our democracy and the peaceful transition of power between administrations to rest on whether Donald Trump feels uncomfortable implying that a state falsified things? Do you really want that? I know we keep getting told, stop saying Donald Trump is so dangerous. He's just like everyone else. It's not what I'm seeing. It's not what millions and millions of Americans are seeing.
Yeah. Bro, like, and the thing is we don't, the reason why Twitter is so popular is because people don't like reading. So this whole link saying, here, read several articles that gives you the truth about something you just read that's only 200 characters long. No, people aren't going to do that. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely not going to do that. And I think we all know people aren't going to do that. Everyone that follows any kind of analytics or anything, how people read and absorb their information, it's not done on a long, stretched out basis. People don't go and research. What they do is they read headlines, and then sometimes they read that first paragraph. Yeah. Bro, that's it. And it may sound weird, or it may sound like I'm overstating this, but it's so true. Trust, when you see a headline, a lot of times that's all people read, and they'll go to telling their friends, hey, did you hear about that one thing I read that was like a sentence long, a phrase maybe? That's how it works. So if you connect to something that has a phrase that you like, yeah, that sounds great. And then it goes, read the facts here. And if you actually have enough curiosity to click that and you see pages of information, you'll go, nope.
Donald Trump is going to war with Twitter, or at least wants Twitter to think that he might go to war with it, because they added a little label providing additional information about mail-in voting on a couple of his lie-filled tweets. He tweeted this: Republicans feel that social media platforms totally silence conservative voices. We will strongly regulate or close them down before we can ever allow this to happen. We saw what they attempted to do and failed in 2016. I don't even know if that's a reference. Does he think that the FBI or Hillary Clinton is controlled by Twitter? I don't know. We can't let a more sophisticated version of that happen again, just like we can't let large-scale mail-in ballots take root in our country. It would be a free-for-all on cheating, forgery, and the theft of ballots. Whoever cheated the most would win. Likewise, social media. Clean up your act now. So what he's saying there is that they are silencing conservative voices. By the way, this is the perfect example of what a claim of censorship means when it's used by a right-winger. His tweet wasn't taken down. It wasn't censored in any way. There was more speech added to it, which is what they say they want. but they claim is censorship when it is applied to them, when there's a reaction to what they say, not the elimination or the blocking of what they say, but just extra speech. So they call it censorship, even though it is obviously not censorship. And they claim that their First Amendment rights are being taken away or subverted in some way, when everyone knows that that is a prohibition on the government blocking your speech, not some private company like Twitter. You can't make a claim about your free right, your rights of free speech being violated as a right winger without getting those two things wrong every single time.
So also in the middle of all this, he wants to go ahead and shut down social media sites that are doing him wrong, because that makes a lot more sense too. So if you're watching this and you're following this guy and you're enjoying what he's saying, he's shutting down social media sites because they don't do what he tells them to. Throughout, I mean, recent history, throughout my life, my parents' life, we like to tout how we're this free country who doesn't do things like subvert people's speech, who doesn't limit what people can learn and see. We've become that, and we've become that on such a large scale because information has become more readily available. Previous to this, powerful people were able to control the message because everyone couldn't get access to it. People have access to more messaging and more information in multiple ways now, so like, we need to start limiting this. We complain about this when it comes to places like North Korea, mm-hmm. where the internet access is limited and certain sites can't be accessed because it'll give the people information about their leadership that they don't want to know about, that they don't want them to know about. But when you see the president say the exact same thing, now let's also remind you, after saying he loves him some Kim Jong-un, he likes how everyone in the country bows down to him, and when he speaks, they shut up and they listen. He's talked about how he enjoys the dictators around the world, and that's who he would like to be. This isn't made up. This isn't hyperbole. This isn't calling him Hitler the way both parties like to call each other Hitler. This is him saying, this is who I am. This is who I like. This is who I'd like to be. No one else said that. He said that. So then when he goes and tries to carry this, by the way, tries to carry out trying to shut down Twitter, which he can't do. He's just saying this to get more people to throw them more red meat so they can say, why come he hasn't shut down Twitter yet? He hasn't shut down Twitter yet because the rest of the country is threatening him. So it'll go through this continuous routine of stupidity that has nothing to do with reality, but it doesn't matter.
You know? Yeah. And by the way, a number of dictators have limited social media, and a number of social media sites have bowed to authoritarian regimes. On YouTube, there are a couple of phrases that are used to criticize the government of China that have been apparently blocked for like 6 months. And YouTube's like, oh, that was a mistake. Whoops, there was a bug there. No, it's because they faced pressure from the Chinese government, and so they bowed to it. And so if right now you're commenting, Trump's not going to shut down Twitter, I largely agree with you. I don't think that he is going to. I think we should be worried about it because it has happened in other places. But no, I don't think that that's necessarily the goal. But there is a goal. And it isn't just drama. Is it partially drama? Yes. But it isn't just drama. When Twitter doesn't take down his accusations that Joe Scarborough murdered someone, despite the fact that the family of the woman who died is desperately pleading for them to stop helping spread those lies, there's a reason for that. When Facebook continues to allow fake news to be spread, and by the way, specifically in the case of U.S., allows U.S. politicians to use verified lies in their ads, there is a reason for that. And it is because they are bowing to pressure from the right wing. Yeah. Constant attacks saying that they're silencing conservatives or that they're shadow banning. What that does is it shifts the goalposts. So now Twitter's like, well, God, I guess to seem fair, we have to advantage conservatives and let them get away with things that are directly against our terms of service. That's what they're going for. It isn't just drama. It isn't necessarily shutting down the platform. It's making sure that there is nothing done to limit the spread of knowing false information. That's what he's going for. And it does have an effect. It warps outcomes on things like the pandemic, people's understanding of the actual science of what's going on right now, and it will certainly affect the election as well. That's the goal. You're seeing it in real time.
And if you can convince enough people that you didn't do what you just did, and you've already created this boogeyman of the other that's doing everything that you've done, then it's an easy play. All you do is do the stuff. It affects the country in a negative way, and you blame them. You don't need to even say anything. You just point and say, it was them. That's why he has these stupid nicknames for people. So that can be buried in your brain instead of actually having to look at something longer than two words, you know. Nickname and their name. That's all you throw at them. So they'd be like, oh, you guys remember that nickname game that I was playing? Let's use that for something really serious right now so that you can stop paying attention to the horrible things that I'm doing to screw your life over.
CNBC's Squawk Box erupted earlier today when two of their hosts, Andrew Ross Sorkin and Joe Kemen, started arguing about who had taken things seriously over the past few months and who had not.
You panicked about the market, panicked about COVID, panicked about the ventilators, panicked about the PPE, panicked about ever going out again, panicked that we'd ever get back to normal.
Joseph, you didn't panic about anything.
That? What good is it? Why
Joseph,
not? Why 100,000
people die.
Keep their head. I understand
100,000 people died, Joe, and all you did was try to help your friend, the president. That's what you did. Every single morning on this show. Every single morning on this show. You abused and abused your position, Joe.
That's totally unfair.
You abused and abused your position.
I'm trying to help investors keep their cool, keep their heads. And as it turned out, that's what they should have done. That's what they should have done. They should have kept their heads. If they had listened to you, Andrew, we're supposed to be at about 8,000.
I wasn't arguing to go sell your stocks, Joseph. I was arguing about people's lives.
We understand.
People's
Andrew,
lives.
Andrew, it's a global pandemic.
Do the news. I'm begging you to do the news, Joseph.
It's a global pandemic.
I'm begging you.
Andy.
Please.
Now, really fast. I don't know either of those hosts. I don't watch CNBC because, like most Americans, I'm not super invested in the stock market. I'm begging him to no longer do the news, actually, that individual. But that was a great back and forth. I mean, that guy, Joe Kernan, the one who was like, you were panicking about all this stuff, saying that, like, man, that guy, Andrew Ross Sorkin, he really lost it. And him losing it potentially endangered the stock market. And then he's pointing out, 100,000 people died. I was losing it, and you should have been losing it. And the thing is, we saw in that guy what you see from so many people when you force them to briefly acknowledge how many people have died. Because as Jer and I were talking about before the show, Media Matters' analysis of 36 hours of over the last couple of weeks of Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, and Tucker Carlson, over those 36 hours, there have been 5 acknowledgments of how many people have died, which is just insane. How do you not accidentally say it more often? He says, I understand that. And on some level, perhaps he does. But do you think he actually thinks about it in the way that you should, considering the magnitude of how many people have died? I mean, how many Afghanistan wars is that? How many 9/11s? It's multiple Vietnams. It took over a decade of in the jungles fighting to kill half as many people as have just died in 2 months from this thing rampaging across the country. And that guy's fear is that Andrew Ross Sorkin might have temporarily hurt the stock market's recovery as he was panicking about more people dying.
This was the division of a couple of guys who usually on, and I don't watch them closely, but, you know, Andrew Ross Sorkin still, you know, he still has the concern for the markets and the investors and all that stuff. And then this is when the divisions start happening between people who usually put that above everything else, but then this is a new everything else that we're now being dealing with right now. And Sorkin is basically like, well, death kind of starts to make me wonder if I should continue to just push this as a financial issue or an investor issue. And even so, he's addressing those issues with the death and the pandemic and the effect on the markets to say, hey, this is serious, not to cover it up. Because, I mean, Joe Kernan said the same thing. He's like, yeah, I'm just trying to make sure that the investors don't freak out. Who else said that? Donald Trump said that. Yep. He goes, the reason why we're going to subdue these things is to make sure that people don't freak out. He said it multiple times. So it does kind of it checks out. The best part about that whole exchange was when Sorkin called out Kernan and said, hey, you just been covering for your friend, the president. And there was this, not silence because he kept talking, but if you look at the accused face, he's like, oh, what do I say? Wow. You really brought that up, Andrew? You really brought that up? Like, this is supposed to be something that stays between them, but it got super personal. And once it gets personal, some revelations start flying.
Yeah, and like you said about not wanting to spook the stock market, like a report came out a couple weeks ago that, was it Jared Kushner was being pushed to purchase more PPE early on, and they were like, no, we're not going to buy a bunch of that because that's going to scare people. Even though it was, of course, much needed. I want to show you one more exchange. Yeah. Immediately after that video, here is how Joe responded to the attacks from Andrew.
global pandemic, Andy, where per capita deaths, we're down near the low end of per capita deaths. We're nowhere near per 100,000. Most places are at 60 deaths per 100,000. We're at 29. So it's terrible that we've lost 100,000 lives. It's terrible. But it was never going to be that we weren't going to come back and that we weren't going to return to normal. And, you know, siding with Ackman and everything else, that, you know, giving credence to all that panic didn't help any investors at all or people with their anxiety and everything else. So that's why we're here, to try and navigate people through, not trying to help Donald Trump.
Okay. Well, yeah. He's focused on what's important, not panicking investors. That's what's important.
I remember we had this line where I say the world changed on 9/11. You know what we've been doing ever since the world changed on 9/11? You can no longer go to the gate and watch your family members literally fly away.
Yeah.
Things changed because we lost Americans in a brutal way, and we're like, we want to avoid that. This is very simple. Do you want to avoid losing Americans in a brutal, broad way like we're doing right now? Take necessary precautions and changes to the way we do things. Our lives are different. TSA is in existence now. You walk through this damn thing in the airport where you put your hands over your head and the thing sweeps by. You don't know what the hell it just went through your body, you know? Yeah. But we do it, you know? And if you don't want to do it, hey, drive from New York to LA. Don't take a flight. There's other options, right? You'll hear that if someone says, I'm not going to go through those protocols. Hey, there's protocols once the world has changed. So when Joe then at the end of that says, hey, you know, we're going to get back to normal, there's a possibility that there's a new normal. And that's just the way it is. And we have to prepare and plan for that and not just go, hey, money's on the line, therefore, let's not do it. Money's on the line with airlines, too. But we have to change the way we did things. You think people weren't afraid to fly after 9/11?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. And the fact that, man, that guy, he can pretend for about 2 seconds to care. And then it's right back to, we can't panic the investors. We can't panic the investors. The thing is, man, if there's anything that's going to recover in America, it's the stock market. Doesn't matter what's happening to the rest of us. Doesn't matter how many people are unemployed. Doesn't matter how many people are dying. Somehow it always bounces back. And if you watch that full segment between those two, both of them, in one way or another, acknowledge that they have no idea how the stock market has bounced back when nothing else has. Like, even they are astounded by the fact that whatever it is, somehow, the way it's set up, you and I can be screwed, we can lose our jobs, we can lose our homes, we can be dead in the street. They're going to be just fine, somehow. But even despite that, it's sheer invincibility in the face of the worst domestic crisis we've had in our life. Don't panic the investors. Don't acknowledge that nurses need masks. It might panic them. It might briefly go down and then go back up again because it doesn't make any sense because it's not really based on anything.
Isn't that weird? No one ever says, don't panic the minimum wage workers.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to. They're panicked. Has Sean Hannity finally seen the light on masks and social distancing? Is he ready to stop pushing Fox News propaganda, telling people to be irresponsible? Probably not. But I do have this video. Take a look.
And start being the mask police. Look at Missouri, Lake of the Ozarks, packed with partygoers this holiday weekend. Look, I understand these are young people. Experts keep saying over and over, they're at a much lower risk. But if they do get this, and again, there's no mask wearing here that I see, not much at all. I see no social distancing. But if they get the virus and then are in contact with older and more vulnerable Americans, that could be a disaster for others. That's why in the short period of time, it's only temporary. You can't social distance. Please wear the mask. Do it for your mom, your dad, your grandma, your grandpa. My humble advice, you don't have to listen to me. I'm not a doctor. But we also need to use some common sense. You need to be cautious, take precautions, because we don't want it to spread to vulnerable people. We've seen what happens when we do.
So that is, as I will show, in comparison to some of the other chuckleheads on Fox, that is the most responsible advice I've heard. It's not much. The segment was about trying to stop people from criticizing people for not wearing masks. It was super irresponsible. But right there, the pool party seems to be over the line for him, JR. What do you think?
Something, man, something triggered him on this. Because also, if you watch and listen to Sean Hannity, as much as I have, he had a different tone there. So when he's talking to irresponsible people who are doing things that would potentially spread COVID further to more people in a very irresponsible way on just one day over a weekend. He kind of has not empathetic, but almost an empathetic tone towards their point of view. Hey, you know what? I mean, I understand it's partying and you're young. I understand that, but think about it this way. Now, if you go home and you have a mother or a father or a grandmother, they can get sick. We've seen suddenly infecting other people isn't badass. Or mm-hmm. wearing a mask is something you can say calmly and delicately to folks. Why is that all of a sudden? Because Hannity's tone when he disagrees with someone on his show, it's pretty snide and disgusting and angry and dismissive. Mm-hmm. That's his tone when he's talking to people. And the Dems, and he comes up with stupid nicknames because Trump does too. He has nicknames for everybody he's talking trash about. Yeah. So he goes through his whole tirade and he's angry and he's dismissive. But now, for some reason, he's appealing to them. He wants to appeal to them because I think when people like this, there's something close to them. Either he's a friend of a friend or someone in the family. Someone had some kind of a scare and he's like, oh my God, this is real. Certain folks, there's been studies about this, they only care when it's something that directly affects them.
Yeah.
Once it doesn't affect them, or if it's other people that are getting sick or having or their lives are affected, like whatever, why don't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? Once your bootstraps are getting all are stripped down and are outside getting beat by the weather, suddenly you're okay with figuring out a way to do this the right way. Something happened, and this is my speculation.
Maybe.
Not that it's true, but something personal makes him wonder about this now.
We don't know for sure. I mean, we've seen enough of these cases with right-wing media figures and politicians that for there to be any chance of empathy for people who don't look and think exactly like them, it has to hit close to home. We don't know for sure. Whatever it is, maybe that'll get through to some conservatives because it's ridiculous, but millions of people watch his show. And the thing is, like, we talked a month ago about the study showing that initially – if you just compare the audience of Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson appeared to be taking it more seriously, and so you're more likely to die if you watch his show. I had an interview with one of the authors of that study. I don't know if this is maybe responding to that, but at least from last night's coverage of coronavirus, Sean Hannity comes off looking pretty good, because do you know what you would have heard if you tuned into Tucker Carlson instead? Well, you would have gotten, there is still no science or data at all. After, why am I doing a deep voice? It's more of like a nasally voice. Whatever. I'm doing my Trump. I don't know why. There is still no science or data at all after 2 months that these lockdowns have done very much to halt the spread of this virus. He goes on and on. Many shows now. There's no reason to believe that stopping people from congregating on the Matterhorn at Disney helped to stop the spread. He really thinks that. It's 100% false. You can literally look at the two-week fall-off in cases after states started social distancing. It's insanity. And it needs to be pointed out because for some, like, I don't really care about Sean Hannity. Everybody knows that Sean Hannity's insane. But for some reason, Tucker Carlson has this aura of he's occasionally reasonable. I think it's because he lets people on his show and people want to maintain those spots. But no, he's telling people the lockdowns shouldn't continue, but not just that. That is where most right-wingers will stop, is that we don't need them anymore. He's saying we never needed them, which means that when the next wave hits or the next pandemic hits, you're going to have more and more Tucker Carlson fans saying, no, we don't need new lockdowns either because I was told they don't do anything. And how many people will die if that becomes the way most people think about this thing? And so Sean Hannity, I don't know why he said what he said, but it is 100% more reasonable, more responsible than Tucker Carlson, who continues to try to lay the foundation for far higher death counts in future pandemics. And then, of course, you have people like Laura Ingraham are saying any state that has a lockdown shouldn't get federal aid. I don't. It's insane. I don't know. And Sean Hannity deserves not even as much credit as we just gave him, and certainly no more. But he won Fox News last night just by saying, hey, if you're going to be like in a pool together drinking White Claw, maybe slap a mask on.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's give him one day and see where he goes.
Yeah. I mean, after all, he is also the guy that said we should have baseball games back and we can just eat hot dogs by pulling our mask out and eating the hot dog or whatever. It was a weird segment.
Oh, I'm both happy and disappointed that I missed that.
It was weird. It was very weird. But anyway, just, and by the way, him saying there, you know what? You don't have to listen to me. I'm not a doctor. Where was that humility when you guys were pushing hydroxychloroquine?
That's what I'm talking about.
A couple of months.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. When it comes to speaking to people he feels he needs to respect in order to actually convince them of something, it's that. But the name of the game is to offend and draw division, draw lines in the sand and create sides of division. That's all he's there to do.
I tried to give him some credit, but it's very difficult to do that because he's the worst. Not the worst, but he's bad. A journalist received quite a bit of pushback in the form of a massive Twitter ratio after tweeting, "Do you think this is a good look for a president of the United States, or do you think this is a bad look for a president of the United States?" with a photo of Joe Biden daring to follow Delaware law and wear a mask while in public on Memorial Day, showing respect for the law and the troops, which I've heard Republicans support, but not so much. So he was, he received a lot of pushback saying that that's insane, especially for, like, a journalist. He's not just some rando. I guess he's a rando journalist, but he's someone. And he's not the only one, by the way, really fast. Britt Hume tweeted a photo of Joe Biden and said, and it looks like it's been Photoshopped, by the way. 100% looks like it's been Photoshopped. But anyway, this might help explain why Trump doesn't like to wear a mask in public, Biden today, which Trump retweeted, by the way. Because when someone implies that Trump is so, like, so self-concerned and worried about what people think that he wouldn't wear the mask, not because he doesn't believe it's necessary, but because he's scared of what it'll look like, Trump's like, yes, sign me up for that. I want people to know that that's how stupid and vain and ignorant I am.
Yeah, it's been, well, so first of all, my guess as to why Trump retweeted this about Biden is because he's thirsty for any kind of information or any kind of post or declaration that he thinks can give him some kind of advantage as we lead up to the election. Because we've all seen and heard and seen the reports about how he's upset that the pandemic has derailed his reelection campaign and he's itching to get back out there. He wants to fill arenas again. He's threatening the governor of North Carolina to move the RNC to Texas or somewhere else because he's saying, no, we're not going to pack another arena in the middle of a pandemic for you. Yeah. So this is his primary focus. He's been moping around the White House. Another report from White House reporter. He's been moping around the White House, angry at how the pandemic has affected him, how it's derailed his opportunity. He had a full plan. His campaign was going to hit Joe Biden on Russia, on Ukraine, going to hit Hunter Biden, going to talk about this, going to talk about that. They, all those things aren't sticking. He tried to go with Obamagate. They're not sticking because people are too busy concerned about whether or not they're going to literally die. So he's mad, and all that's left is like, well, somebody tweeted something about Joe Biden wearing a mask. I'm going to retweet that because maybe that'll stick. He's just throwing it against the wall, as he's always done, and that's all he's got now. So this is where we now stand. It can fly in the face of his Surgeon General. It can fly in the face of the CDC. It can fly in the face of Dr. Fauci and Birx. It doesn't matter. He's just throwing things out there because he needs someone to pay attention to him on something other than the over 100,000 people that it is.
Yeah. Really fast, you know, like, obviously we're very critical of Joe Biden. I think he looks cool there. Like, I'm not a fan of Joe Biden, don't agree with him most of the issues. You think that that looks bad? It's the best Joe Biden has looked in months.
None of it makes any sense.
None of it makes any sense.
It's crazy because I said this when the mask wearing started. I was like, man. And this happens in other countries, so I was corrected quickly. And I kind of figured it did, but still. I was like, man, wait until, like, you know, mask wearing becomes your not claim to fame, but your status symbol. Like, oh, look, I got a Burberry mask.
Oh, 100%. It's coming. It's totally coming.
So, I mean, people like the look of a mask if it looks right. So there's no big thing.
So, look, I teased this at the beginning of the show, so I want to end the show with this. I have, for the first 2 months of the war against wearing a mask, I could not understand how this incredibly benign, but apparently scientifically proven, very effective way of stopping the spread of COVID-19, why so many Americans, not the majority by any means, but millions of Americans would be so against it. And I read an article on Business Insider that reminded me of something that made me think, oh yeah, of course they were going to be against this. Of course, because it reminded me of a thing that is just true of Americans. And so I want to make an analogy of what we're talking about here. So there is a YouTube channel, a very popular YouTube channel called Will It Blend, where they have a blender and they put something in it to see if the blender can shred it. But long before we had that channel, we had another version of Will It Blend, and it was called the American Automotive Industry. Because seatbelts didn't exist for literally decades, and so when you'd crash in a car, you would be bounced off of all the metal and glass parts in it. And many, many people blended for literally decades. Tens of thousands, many tens of thousands have died. And it wasn't really until Ralph Nader, then 31 years old, published a book called Unsafe at Any Speed that talked about a number of different safety improvements that were needed in cars, but seatbelts were one of those. And that was shockingly controversial, with many Americans getting up in arms about seatbelts when they were initially offered as an option on cars in the early years. I think in 1953 to 1955 or so, they were offered on Fords. Do you know what percentage sprung for the optional seatbelts, JR?
I'm going to shoot for 10%.
2% paid the $27, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it's also your life, so it seems worth it. And the thing is, decades after that, when they had become legally required in many states, as late as 1983, fewer than 15% of Americans said they use seatbelts consistently. 15%. That's less than most things you can think of. In 1984, 65% of Americans opposed mandatory belt laws, saying that they were ineffective, inconvenient, and uncomfortable, and some made the case that it was safer to be thrown clear from a wreck than trapped inside one, which is insane and stupid and not true. And even today, I rode motorcycles for a number of years, and I will tell you that not only is wearing a helmet a good idea if you value your skull and what's inside of it, but also riding a motorcycle without eye protection is an incredibly uncomfortable experience, the wind in your eyes. But many men still argue to this day that they should not be required to wear helmets. This is America. We don't want to be protected from anything. And I understand if it is just about protecting you, that might seem like one thing. But in many of these cases, this is not just about you. If a motorcyclist gets a hornet in the eye and goes crashing off the street, they can kill other people. The same thing can happen in cars too. Drunk driving laws were vigorously opposed by a portion of the American public as well. That is not just about protecting you. That's about protecting other people as well. But this has always been a thing about America, where we have to knee-jerk fight against anything that will protect our lives or even other people's lives.
If it originates with us, if there's something that's protecting our lives from the other, foreign people, the domestic people that we consider the other, we have to move mountains to protect ourselves from them.
Yeah. Yeah, Ralph Nader put it very well. He said, we're a very hard society to change cognitively. And I would say that even that seems optimistic, because that implies that we have. Maybe we could, but how much have we really learned? I mean, I guess like 90% of Americans now use seatbelts. That is progress.
Yep. And guess what else? It's all, and you know this, obviously, it's backed by the law. Cop catch you without your seatbelt on, you're getting a ticket.
Yeah.
Keep it real. But I mean, I don't know if these same people who are against the masks are going to come out and you know, get. I said this the other day. Go out there, take your seatbelt off, drive next to a cop, look at him and show him that you're not wearing your seatbelt. Then speed off in front of him. And after he pulls you over and says, hey, you don't have a seatbelt on. What are you doing? Start screaming at him. Mm-hmm. Get in his face and tell him you're an American. Tell him you deserve to do whatever you want. Say, last time I checked, this is America. And do all that stuff that you've been saying. See how that goes for you. See if your friends surround you and go, yeah, good job, John. Sorry, I don't mean to use that name.
Good John.
Good job, Billy. Good job sticking it to the man. Tell him you're not going to wear your seatbelt. No, that's the law, and you're going to get a ticket and now arrested for it for getting in the guy's face.
Americans love petty, pointless rebellion. Not actual rebellion that would improve their lot in life, but petty, pointless rebellion. Like, imagine... I've been in a couple of very minor motorcycle accidents. And the one time that I went flying off my bike and, you know, went skidding a couple dozen yards down the road, what went through my head at that second was not the pavement, thankfully, because I was wearing a helmet. It wasn't like, man, this helmet's uncomfortable. I would really feel better at this moment if I had some more airflow in my locks. Anyway, what a dumb country we live in. What a dumb, dumb country. Wear a damn mask. If you don't think it looks cool, make a cooler one. And I will say what I said before. All these guys saying that they're macho men, they're not going to wear masks. Man, put an AR-15 in their hand and a skull bandana will magically appear around their face. They can't help themselves but wearing a face covering if you give them a shotgun.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, when it's about protecting grandma from COVID-19, I don't wanna.
Yeah, my last thought on this, John, I want these old pictures of your locks.
None exist. None
motorcycle exists. Riding days.
No. I watched too much WWE. I was learning all the wrong stuff from those wrestlers. Very excited to now welcome to the show the director of Protect the Sacred, Allie Young. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you on, although we are going to be talking about some pretty serious and dark topics. I want to start off with your organization. Can you tell us a little bit about Protect the Sacred, what its mission is?
Sure. Protect the Sacred started about the end of March, I believe, and we launched Protect the Sacred as a call to Native youth or Navajo youth to step up in this time to be leaders and messengers. We saw that there was an information gap between our younger people and our elders. A lot of our elders don't speak English, and what they were seeing on TV is hard to understand. And so we were kind of that middle person to provide context and also relay the severity of the virus to our youth, who then were the ones that took that messaging back to their families and really led the charge to staying home, because protecting the sacred to Indigenous peoples means protecting our elders, who are the carriers of our knowledge, our language, and our stories, and our culture. And our youth are still learning all of that and eager to learn those traditional teachings from our elders.
Okay. And a strong contrast to some who've been advocating reopening nationally, and if that costs a few grandmas and grandpas, then that's a necessary cost. So your organization, I'm sure, over time is going to address a lot of different topics, understandably very focused on the pandemic right now. And I don't know what percentage of the American public know, but the Navajo Nation, the incidence of coronavirus is the highest anywhere, higher than New York City. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, right now we're considered the number one hotspot per capita. And that's because our Navajo Nation is the population living on Navajo is approximately 173 to 175,000. And, you know, we're just seeing this surge in cases and deaths. And for a Native community, right now, I think we're up to, I think somewhere between like 150 to 160 deaths. And for a Native community, that's a lot of deaths when you consider the fact that, you know, we've overcome so much and have survived genocide and forced assimilation. And right now we're really fighting for what we have left after centuries of that trauma. And that's what we're protecting. And so that's why it's, you know, it is a big deal that a Native American reservation is being impacted like this, because we are the first peoples of this land and we're guaranteed healthcare and education in our treaties. And all of that is being broken right now, especially with this lag of federal aid from the government.
And so has the situation over the past month or so, has it been improving? Have you seen the curve start to flatten? And when you reference the lacking aid coming from the federal government, what would be most helpful right now at this point?
Yeah, there's been there's starting to be a flattening of the curve. I think we're still a ways from our plateau, But we are seeing, because of our leadership in our Navajo Nation president, Jonathan Nez, who has been enforcing stricter lockdowns. So now on the weekends, we have, instead of, before they were called curfews and people could still travel around the reservation. So our Navajo Nation president has enforced stricter lockdowns. And so now we're at a point where the fast food restaurants, even the gas stations are closed on the weekends. So there's absolutely nowhere that anyone can go. And we are seeing a positive result from that.
Okay. And how have those sorts of efforts, how have they been accepted by the people living in the area?
You know, it's hard, especially because we are living in a generation where, you know, things are more convenient, even for us, you know, living on reservations. But, you know, so there's just a balance. And I think that's that our youth and our people, thankfully, are have realized the importance of staying home, social distancing, taking precautions. And I think that, you know, in the beginning, it was hard to communicate that. But as we're seeing the severity and the impact on our reservation, we are respecting it more and staying home.
And, you know, I wonder, it seemed like throughout the pandemic, the only times that the government has taken any part of this seriously is when there has been a massive amount of outrage and media coverage. And so you're talking about how there's been a lack of aid in a variety of different areas. And there's also obviously a lack of press coverage about the fact that this is even going on the reservation. Do you think that those two things are likely linked?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, actually the Navajo Nation president in a interview with CNN, he sort of credited the awareness that we're bringing to the Navajo Nation through Protect the Sacred, because I started this with a friend of mine, Mark Ruffalo, and Mark has helped us with connections, you know, to Governor Cuomo, Chris Cuomo, Sean Penn, who and Chef Jose Andres, who were here just last week, coming to bring this aid to the Navajo Nation, you know, making those introductions to the Navajo Nation and the Navajo Nation president, and raising that awareness with his platform and the platform of some of his friends, who are, you know, Hollywood influencers and activists and allies, has been tremendous, and it's helped greatly, according to our Navajo Nation president. But the Navajo Nation president even said that he feels, because of that awareness, it put pressure on the government, because, you know, the United States president, I think he tunes into the news all the time to see what people are saying about him. So I'm sure that he was seeing that this, you know, that our nation is speaking out, and that we do need this help, and I think we put that pressure on them.
I'm glad to hear that, and I hope that it pays off, especially with lives still very much being on the line. I wanted to talk about one other topic too, separate from your work as an activist, as an organizer. I know that you you had a post on social media about a protest that you had witnessed that was spread pretty widely. We have a picture of the protest. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience of that event?
Yeah, so that happened here in Farmington, New Mexico, which is a border town just outside the Navajo Nation, you know, just a few miles. And that happened last Thursday. This was the second protest that Farmington held. There was one the week prior. And these are their open New Mexico rallies. And, you know, I would drive around and capture some video and take some photos, because my mom is an essential worker. She works at the Indian Health Service in Shiprock, New Mexico. And so when she was coming home from work, you know, she saw the protest happening. So we went around and to see what was happening. And it was really a Trump rally. They had big signs, Trump Pence signs, people on microphones talking to the mass crowd. I think there were over 500 protesters that gathered last week. And then unfortunately, you know, had Nazi swastika flags. And that is very infuriating, especially miles from a Native American reservation. And, yeah. You know, some of the pushback is that, you know, this is an open New Mexico rally. We were waving this flag because this is how we feel about our governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, and that the way she's enforcing this lockdown, parts of New Mexico have opened up, but Farmington and the San Juan region area is one of the most infected regions of New Mexico. And, you know, the fact that it borders the Navajo reservation where a lot of our people come to shop because there are only 13 grocery stores across the Navajo Nation, which is 27,000 square miles. So a lot of our people have to travel 2-3 hours to these border towns to do their essential shopping. And they're among these people who are protesting and without masks and in huge gatherings and sure, you know, making it worse, spreading the virus. And our people have to shop among them. And so that's putting, you know, and just, you know, on a basic like human level to think about your neighbors who are Native American. You know, that's something they should be thinking about and they should be considering. And I know that a lot of people are frustrated right now because of their businesses. But, you know, really this comes down to loving each other and caring for each other as humans and as neighbors. And that's what has been infuriating about this. And then also the fact that these protesters would compare the New Mexico governor's lockdowns as a Nazi regime. I think that's a comparison that's trivializing the real trauma that the Jewish people and Native Americans both faced. You know, we both faced genocide and this forced assimilation and again, centuries of trauma and they're calling, you know, his sign there says what's next, concentration camps. And the fact that their neighbors, Native Americans were put on reservations that were essentially concentration camps and Hitler modeled the Jewish concentration camps on what, colonizers in America did to Native Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like they're this close to like actually learning something, but they're resistant to the actual learning. And I can only imagine how scary it must be to see a group of hundreds of these people, swastika flags, being raised. And at some of the other protests, you've had swastikas, you've had, clearly anti-Semitic signs and things like that. And in the case of the swastikas, they say, sort of as you pointed out, no, we're just holding this because the governor's a Nazi. The thing is, like, I've felt through the course of my life sometimes that the government is pursuing sort of fascist policies and things like that. I never waved a Nazi flag. It seems like it's not necessarily so much about the person you're protesting as an excuse to maybe wave a flag that you're kind of interested in. I don't feel obligated to comment on that, but that's sort of what I've been thinking as I've watched these protests spread across the country.
Well, you know, I do have a comment because I have grown up around this area and am very familiar with the history of Farmington, New Mexico, which does have a history of racism. There's against Native Americans, against the Navajo people, who also there's a large population of Navajo people living in this border town. And there's a book called The Broken Circle that's about that racism. And, you know, living here and around here, is, I've seen it firsthand where there's these big trucks driving around with their Confederate flags hanging off the back of the trucks. And so that kind of like almost yeah. Southern pride that's up here in that's in the Southwest in New Mexico. And so for me, it's like we also need to consider the history of this town with the relationship and the tension that does exist between the non-native population and the Navajo population. And you know, just growing up and I have stories that I could share from my childhood of acts of racism that were against my family, against my little brother who, you know, actually today's his birthday. And he committed suicide, and you know, he left a note, and in the note it said, "It's hard to stay alive when you're brown and gifted," and I think that speaks volumes to his experience living in this area.
Wow, that is absolutely devastating, and so yeah, I can only imagine how hard today must be. But I'm sure he'd be incredibly proud of the work that you're doing. And you know, just you know, as an individual, as a representative of TYT, I want to thank you both for that work, trying to draw attention to an absolute tragedy that both could have been avoided and could be improved in the future if the right people take notice. And I want to thank you for joining us on the program today and talking about these issues.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.